Sunday Evangelium with Father Marcus Holden, on the fifth Sunday of the year.
The disciples came to Jesus and said, "Everybody's looking for you." Everyone is interested. Was this true? In one sense, yes. The human heart is always on the lookout for happiness. It's always interested in fulfillment. No one could really deny this. All humans desire by nature to be happy. The philosopher Aristotle, a long time before Christ, saw this. This true happiness Jesus promised and brought. So in one sense, the disciples were right. They were all looking for him. God has made us for himself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in him. But at the same time, Jesus knew the fickleness of the crowd that would follow him for miracles, for food, for political leadership and rallying, that would turn against him at Jerusalem. Here was the light of the world shining so brightly, and yet people were not really interested. Light is not always welcomed, just like the thief doesn't welcome the spotlight of the police, so we in general find God's light too uncomfortable. Human beings, and they've not changed greatly through history, as the reading from 2,500 years ago in the book of Job shows us, human beings in fact have a tendency, a great tendency, both for despair, to see life as irrational and meaningless, and also to ignore truth. Perversely, human beings in general seem to prefer darkness to light. Job had a bad time. It was a time of testing, but he saw his lot as a punishment. Everything was taken away from him. His wife alone remained, and she cursed him and said, "Curse God and die." The words of Job are profoundly expressive of the human tendency to absurdity and despair. "Swifter than the weaver's shuttle, my days have passed and vanished, leaving no hope behind. Remember that my life is but a breath, and that my eyes will never again see joy." Job does come round in the end, after questioning God. But God spoke to him and began to ask him questions. "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the world?" Job was being called to trust in God. This he eventually did, and everything was restored to him. Was Shakespeare inspired by the book of Job, I wonder, when he put on the lips of the despairing Macbeth the words, "Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player who struts and frets his hour upon the stage, and then is heard no more. 'Tis a tale told by an idiot, full of strength and fury, signifying nothing." Signifying nothing. This is the creed of nihilism. No spelling test regarding that word. You might call it nothingism. It's an old philosophy, given a new name in the 19th century by Nietzsche, who said, "God is dead." It is willful and chosen absurdity. Yet it is the practical belief of the majority of human beings in Western Europe today. Practical, I say. They don't say to themselves, "We are nihilists," or that life has no meaning, and knowledge of destiny and purpose is pure illusion, as Nietzsche did. But for all intents and purposes, they live this creed practically and successfully. Let me give you some examples of what I mean. There are millions of people in our society right now whose sole definition of themselves is to be born, to go to school, to get a job, maybe a family, to grow old and then die. They live Macbeth's tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, as if the only meaning to life was death, and in between all else, the fleeting thrill, the chase for money and possession, the lust for power and control. These are but, indeed, a strutting and fretting fool on a stage. David Hume, the Scottish philosopher, laughed at his deathbed, saying, "I will simply go out of existence." I remember a few years ago, a woman, Dr. Anne Turner, in an interview with the BBC, before she travelled to Switzerland for euthanasia, said, Doctors should be able to help people to die. I always quote the fact that I had a cat, and I had him put down because he was riddled with cancer, but we cannot do that with humans at all now. Is this what we've come to? What does this say about us and about our understanding of the meaning of life? We know that the human heart, that the human person, demands better than this, is worth much more than this. Mere science cannot define us, as if we were no more than the sum of random atoms or chemicals. We cannot simply look at ourselves as animals, hungry for the day but not for eternity. We'd be foolish to see ourselves as defined similarly by our states or our governments. Then who are we? When Jesus Christ came into this world, it was like a great meteor. His coming changed the globe forever. The best human beings had speculated and searched to find the real meaning of life, love, and truth. Then he came and said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the resurrection. He who lives and believes in me will never die. In the Gospel, we see Jesus at work, beginning his mission. Do we believe this? And yet, do we not also get conned, duped into accepting the present meaninglessness of our world and its practical goings on? Is life passing us by because we're too caught up in that race for money, pleasure, and power, and have lost sight of the real reason why we are here? We have a mission to proclaim much more. One of the unfortunate traits of the Brits today is apathy and suspicion of enthusiasm in religion. Unfortunately, while such an attitude may help us to avoid the extreme expressions of fanaticism, is it one that really helps us to get to heaven? Our task, therefore, is to awaken our age out of its apathy and indifference to consider that life may be worth living, that there may be some meaning to our being born into this colourful world, that there might be something a little more profound about those whom we love than a random mutation of chemicals, that death can be questioned and need not be seen as the end. This is the way of Job. There is perhaps more to people than the next pleasure, the next honour, the next victory. Our job is to convince people to see further, to question more, to offer the goodness that St. Paul speaks of. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel, he says. It is a responsibility which has been put in my hands. For the weak I made myself weak. I made myself all things to all men in order to save some at any cost. I invite you finally to listen to the words of Pope Benedict spoken in an audience a few years ago, which touch precisely upon these subjects. Only where God is seen does life truly begin. Only when we meet the living God in Christ do we begin to know what life is. We are not some casual and meaningless product of evolution. Each of us is the result of a thought of God. Each of us is willed. Each of us is loved. Each of us is necessary. There is nothing more beautiful than to be surprised by the gospel, by the encounter with Christ. There is nothing more beautiful than to know him and to speak to others of our friendship with him.